This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Start sleeping on a luxury hybrid mattress made with premium materials at half the price with DreamCloud's Labor Day sale. DreamCloud combines the perfect blend of comfy memory foam and supportive coils to make you feel like you're sleeping on a cloud. Every DreamCloud comes with $599 in accessories, plus an additional $200 off, a 365-night home trial, free shipping and returns, and a forever warranty. Go to dreamcloudsleep.com today. Hurry, this offer ends September 5th.
Do you import and export goods in and out of the UK? If so, then look no further for all your logistics and freight forwarding needs than Lila International Logistics, owned and run by West Ham fans. Lila, that's L-I-L-A, International Logistics, provides businesses with affordable import and export rates for sending and receiving products anywhere around the world, whether it be by air freight, sea freight, courier or road freight. Lila provide a bespoke service for shipments, so you ain't being passed between departments and you have a direct contact at all times 24/7 for shipments. Check out their website at www.lilalogistics.co.uk for more info.
You're listening to the West Ham Way podcast with Dave and X. Oi, oi!
Hello and welcome to the West Ham Way podcast with myself, Dave Walker, an ex-WHU employee. After three games without a win, we needed to bounce back, and bounce back we did after a fantastic win against Chelsea. What a result and what a feeling when you look at that league table after 15 games. We'll be talking about another amazing day at the London Stadium before getting news from X and answering questions from patrons of the West Ham Way. Champions of Europe, we're gonna sing that. X, what a day. It doesn't get much better than that. And do you know what? To be fair, Mad Dog called it. He said that we'd have more trouble with Brighton than we would with Chelsea, and he was right. Talk us through what was an incredible day at the London Stadium.
Well, it was a great game, wasn't it? It was one that was sort of up and down of emotions because, you know, they obviously took the lead and then they took the lead again. And so you kind of up and down with your emotions. And that, and obviously the injuries have also done a post up and down from the result as well. But, I mean, if you just take that out of it and you go on the performance, Chelsea, for me, prior to that game, with a team that I thought were going to win the league. And, you know, we've got them beating them. Liverpool and Man City are their rivals to the championship, and both of them have been beaten at home by us as well. So you just have to just enjoy this season and savour it, because I'd like to think we've got more of this to come, because I think with Moyes at the helm and the players we've got and so on, that we will. But as you know, being a fan as long as I have, these seasons don't come along very often. So although we did have one last year as well, so we really got to say it was a really good performance. And I'd actually say we'd be playing slightly better against Liverpool in our of the two wins. But that said, who cares? It's 3 points at the end of the day. And, you know, we've had a massive amount of fixtures recently. So to beat them like we did is amazing. Obviously, a bit of luck for Masuaku's goal. But at the end of the day, that's what successful teams have. They have a bit of luck. Look at Liverpool. They scored the last kick of the game pretty much as well. So you have to have that bit of luck to do well in the season. And hopefully, that's a sign that we've got that and we're going to have a good season.
Yeah, I thought we showed fantastic character and self-belief in that game because it wasn't ideal at times, but
no,
it's a difficult game, isn't it? It really is. They've got so many good players and they're doing really well. And you're right, you know, they're going to be right up there for the championship this season. So to beat them was just fantastic. And you could tell, you know, in players like Mason Mount, how much confidence they've got. And, you know, when he scored his goal, what a great goal, by the way. He was giving it a big one, wasn't he? And, you know, he was trying to be bollocks. So it was great to see the contrasting emotions with him, like going from feeling like $1 million to fucking two bob note, you know, when he lost the game. I loved that. I thought that was brilliant. I reckon Dex had a bit of fun with him since as well.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, I thought it makes about slight defences. I actually don't mind him as a player, as a person before he did mock the fans, which he shouldn't have done. He should have risen above it. West Ham fans were singing just a shit Declan Rice and stuff, so like people seem to think it was a bit up the boat. There was a little bit of banter beforehand, but yeah, he's an idiot for doing that, because more often than not when you do something like that, it comes back to bite you, doesn't it? So certainly in West Ham's cases it does, but really it was nice to sort of for us and for Dec and for everyone really to be able to sort of laugh at his cockiness and I'm glad. I mean, it was a great goal in fairness, first time volley like that. I mean, you don't need to go not like cup your hands to the fans and stuff. It's never gonna end well, really, is it?
No. I mean, you've been critical of Fabianski in the past. Do you think you could have done better on both goals?
It's a tough one. It really is a tough one. I mean, like, the second one, possibly not. The first one, yeah. I think he could have got a stronger hand on it, really. I mean, it's hard because it's from quite, like, you know, close range and stuff. And, you know, you can make an argument either way. Part of me thinks Areola would have saved that one, being slightly taller, being slightly more flexible and stuff. I think he might have saved the first goal. Second one's difficult because it was bottom corner and it was hit first time and, you know, I don't know. That's the thing with me with Fabianski, though. And I don't want to criticise him as much as I have, because I actually think he's been a lot better this season than I thought he was towards the end of last season. However, there's always, most goals that West Ham concede, and honestly, look back through them, there's that question, could he have done better? And I think the fact that you can ask that question about every, like most goals that are conceded, suggests that at least probably half of them he probably could have. Therefore, you have to raise questions about him now. I'm not at the point yet where I'm saying he needs to be dropped now. I'm not at that point at all, because I think he's had some good games. He's played in a team that's doing well, so I'm not going to say that yet. But there has to come a point where, you know, you do seriously consider Areola for him, because Areola's played really well in every game he's played. So it'd be interesting. I would play Areola on Thursday. People are saying you've got to play Randolph Martin or even one of the youngsters. I wouldn't. I think it's really important that keepers have regular games. I would play Areola in that game. And I think it'll be a test for him, because I think we'll have a weakened side. So I think there'll be more shots for him to save. And I think you need to play him. And then we'll see how we go over the Christmas period. But there has to come a point where you do consider it, I think, yeah. Mm-hmm. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I love Fab. You know, I've loved him ever since we signed him. I think he's a brilliant keeper, and I know he's not getting any younger, and that possibly kind of steers me towards thinking, you know, would a 25-year-old Fab have done a little bit better with those goals? I mean, from the corner especially, I think he was a little bit slow getting off the ground for that.
His reflexes, which is something you do with age.
Well, exactly. Yeah, understandably, it is going to slow down a little bit with age. And, you know, at the end of the day, no keeper likes to get beat at their near post. He did. Mm-hmm. Could he have been a little bit quicker with that one? I don't think it's clear cut on either of them, to be honest, which I think why it's a discussion point. But I think if I had a gun to my head, I'd say I think he possibly could have done a little bit better. I think a younger Fabianski would have done better, I think, is the best way I can answer that question.
Yeah.
Is that another special memory that edges us closer to loving the London Stadium, do you think?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, look at this season, mate. Seriously, I mean, unfortunately, I didn't get to go to the Man City game. I didn't watch it because I was on holiday, although in bed, sick on holiday, I might add, just for the people that want to get the violins out there. But I was obviously at Liverpool Spurs Chelsea game, and some of the other wins that we've had at that season in previous years. We've got some of them, probably all of them. And it is really starting to, like, feel a lot better. And as you've always said, and you've always said it constantly since we've been doing this, it's a results-based business. And once the results start to flow, then the memories and the happy times start to. But, you know, you see that clip. I think both you and I were tagged into it and we retweeted it about the Bowen's on fire, you know. Or,
yeah.
I don't know, it's in the second line, but and it's up there for that DJ, the Heineken DJ booth outside. And you see the atmosphere of the fans there. And it feels better walking to the stadium. I felt recently, and it could be because I'm walking with a positive mindset, so I'm feeling positive before I've even got there. But it's natural, isn't it, mate? It's like anything, you know, when you move house or when you change job, or especially when you move from somewhere that you loved and you really, really liked it there, it takes ages and you always look back to the old place, and nothing will ever replace Upton Park. And still now, if you was to ask me, would you move back there or stay at London Stadium? Despite the massive decrease in capacity, I would go back to Upton Park purely because of, well, for a few reasons. But anyway, but that said, that can't happen. You know, that isn't an option. So going forward, the more years we have away and the more special results we create, it will naturally do that. And sadly, once generations start to move on and younger generations that didn't experience Upton Park start to come in, then it will have to change because they won't know any different.
I think it is about creating your own history. I've said this before, because the analogy of the house is a good one. You know, for example, my mum is institutionalised by the house that she's always lived in Hainault. And, you know, there are better areas and better houses that she could move to, but it's steeped in history. It's steeped in memories. You know, her marriage was there. All of her kids were there. The Christmases and birthdays and family gatherings and parties.
Dixie. And,
not Dixie, yeah, Bish as well. Yeah, yeah. God rest his soul. And Bubbles and Brooklyn. You know, and they're all buried in the garden. Fuck me, you can't move in that garden now. I'll tell you what. if that garden turns into a bog and the fucking marshland starts appearing, it'd be like Pet Cemetery in there. Fucking terrible.
Let me go around there on a Halloween.
No. and but for her, you know, to go to move from all of that to then go into ultimately what is an empty shell would be a struggle, like it would be for anyone. And it's the same thing that applies with West Ham fans. All you've ever known is Upton Park. To then go to a big, shiny corporate place with no history was always going to be difficult. But week in, week out now, we're slowly building our own history and building an emotional attachment to that place. And look, I know people are always going to say it's not a football stadium. I think that's quite a harsh comment. You know,
it's okay, better since it's levelled off. Saturday, it looks a lot better since it's been levelled off.
Yeah. 100%. And I know culturally it's very different, and for that reason you can't really compare, but you look around most grounds in Europe, distances from the pitch and running tracks, and that's standard, you know.
Look, so at Wolves, mate, you know,
we made that comparison to Wolves.
Exactly. Yeah. No one ever talks about that, but where we were in the away section was as far away from the pitch as I am at the London Stadium. Well, that's London Stadium.
I think that's a really good shout, actually. I think we've even made a similar comparison when we went to Arsenal.
Yeah,
it's not as if you're literally breathing on the players next there, is it? So, and you know, when you look at the electric atmospheres that we can create there, it unquestionably can be a fortress. And another important thing that you've mentioned as well is obviously it's a generational thing. You know, the generations that are now coming through, it's the only thing they'll ever know, and they've got nothing to compare it to. It's like my youngest now is showing such a real genuine interest in West Ham now, a genuine love and excitement for the club. And she never went to Upton Park. And I know she's going to love it at the London Stadium. So it is. It's all about creating your own memories, your own history, and giving it a chance. And how much easier is it to do that when you're smashing out top quality results like that? You know, it's just brilliant. It's just brilliant. And we needed that as well, because Wolves, I think we've all agreed, is probably our worst performance of the season. And that we was a bit deflated after that. Man City, always going to be difficult. I think too many people moaned about that result, to be honest, because that was tough. It was away from home. They're a quality side. Tough conditions. Was always going to be difficult. Brighton, a lot of credit goes their way because of their style of play, and you have to credit Graham Potter for that. That's fair enough. I still think that was a shit result, personally. I wasn't happy with that. So we really needed a bounce back. And I've got to be honest, X, I wasn't expecting it against Chelsea. And it just goes to show, you never know what you're going to get from West Ham. But
that was shown by your predictions. I noticed on the predictions that you put on page, you put a West Ham win. Then on the scourges, predictions league, you put a Chelsea win.
Well, see, this is part of my problem with the predictions league, because I get so indecisive. And, you know, when I get asked for my predictions on Patreon, I just go with my gut instinct and that's it. But when it comes to the predictions league, and not just with West Ham, I change my mind so many times. I'm Dithering Dave on the predictions league. And I sometimes I think it's a good thing because I'm really trying to think of it. Other times I just think, no, I should go with my gut. And that leads me to my next question, actually, because I think what was a tipping point to maybe steer me towards a Chelsea win at the 11th hour was seeing the decision to play five at the back with West Ham. Was that something you agreed with at the time?
I was in mixed minds. See, I heard the team the night before, so I knew this was happening. So I had a whole evening to reflect upon it, as you do on a Friday night. And I was thinking about it because the Man City game, one of the criticisms you could have labelled it, that game was that we showed them too much respect. We changed our team. We matched them. We tried to sort of end up giving more defence to make it harder for them and so on. And we almost showed them too much respect. So then against Chelsea, we've almost done the same thing. We basically fitted our formation to match their formation. When you do that, if you're going to match a formation and you're almost going to go like for like, you have to be confident that you are the better team, because you're almost taking a tactical advantage you could get from certain scenarios out of the game because you're going like for like. And you say, well, my player's better. So if it's the same, we'll win. But when I saw that it was Zuma, Diop and Dawson, I thought, you know, that is a solid back, centre-back, like triple partnership along there. And then I thought, with Johnson and Chappell, it's very solid. It's going to take good performance from Chelsea to get through that. And I was pleased that Lanzini came in. You know, that was the right move, definitely, for him to come in, as was proven. So I thought, obviously, he scored, but he played well, despite the goal. And it almost... So with hindsight, it's very easy. To say, yeah, Moyes going spot on. At the time, I was very mixed opinions on it. And you know, if we'd lost, that would have been the first thing that West Ham fans have said. They would have said, why did we do that? Why don't we just play to our strengths? And this is why he's the manager he is. He has to make calls like that. And he has to make calls that he believes the best. And he sees what we don't see. And that's how it works in training. You know, if you put a team together in training and for 2-3 days, you play that 11 and they look really, really good in training, you could go into a match against Chelsea or whoever confident that it's going to work. But we never see that. So you almost have to trust him. I'm at the point now where Moyes makes a decision. Yes, I can critique it and I can make an opinion on it. I'm almost at the point where I say, I'm like, right, I'll give anything a go. If he thinks that's right, I'm going to go with that.
I don't know about you, but it was great to see Vlad back in the starting lineup. I think he had a great game. Do you think he starts now?
It's really hard, isn't it, to make that call? I mean, he's going to anyway, because Johnson's going to be out.
Of course.
So naturally, it's going to happen anyway. But let's just assume that Johnson was fit, right? It's a very tough one because you're judging. He has played really well, I agree with you. I think the last two games, which is the beauty of having strength in depth where you've got to fight for your place, he's come back and he's known he's going to be top of his game. And he has been. I mean, he played well against Brighton. I think he played very well against Chelsea. So, yeah, he's proven he should come back. It's a bit harsh on Johnson because obviously Johnson's been moved to left back, which isn't his strongest position. So you're almost comparing the two, where one's out of position, which is harsh on Johnson. It really, really is harsh. But if Johnson was fit, purely based on the performance level of the two of them, regardless of the fact that Johnson was out of position, I think I would now have Chappell back in, because because as well he's had that bit of a rest now where obviously we all know he's injured, but fatigue wise he's had that bit of a rest. He's come back, he looks a lot sharper. We've got a lot of games coming up anyway, so if Chaffel's playing in the league, for example, I'd bring Johnson in for the Tottenham game and so on. But I think you have to, as I've always said, you reward on performance. And Chaffel's done nothing wrong at right back. So as harsh as it is on Johnson, if Johnson was fit, but luckily, well, I don't know if luckily is the right word, but fate has conspired to make the decision for you. I think it does need to be Chaffel, yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Because let's not forget, he was on top of his game before he lost his place.
Yeah.
And he's come back in and done very well. And listen, massive credit to Johnson. He's been fantastic. He's been better than I thought he would be, even though I've always, genuinely always rated him. Mm. The key difference for me, other than the consistent performance from Vlad, is his grit and nastiness and spite. I like that in a defender. Yeah. I want that in my defence. And, you know, Ben, he's such a likeable, lovable, reserved lad, isn't he? I don't think he's got that in his DNA. And there's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't mean you're a lesser defender because you don't carry that. It's just my preference to see that spite in my defenders. And that's what he brings to the party as well, I think. So I think he's got to start. He really has. Let's talk about the man of the moment. There was also the man of the match, Jarrod Bowen. He was phenomenal, wasn't he?
Brilliant performance. I'm glad for once whoever decided the man of the match award at the stadium actually called it right, because generally they're random in their selections. I think they sit down and say, which player would you like to meet today? Because obviously they present the award. They go, oh, I fancy meeting Antonio. They go, oh, give me a man of the match then. Honestly, I think it's very, very random, but whoever called it this time called it spot on, because for me, he was head and shoulders the best player. He was working all over the pitch. He was getting stuck in. He was winning the ball. He was creating things. Obviously, he got the penalty. He scored the goal. I thought it was a really good performance. And if you're the manager of England, Gareth Southgate, and you're watching that game, which I assume he did, because there was no other game on at that time that he would have had an interest in, then you see that and you've got to give him a chance. And I'm not one that loves calling up players for a national team, because I'm always worried they're going to get injured. But if you're thinking of what's fair to Bowen, the way he performed there was top class. He's taken apart arguably the best team in the Premier League. Well, they were at the time we played them, because they were top of the league. And he's made their defenders look rubbish. And I thought it was a superb performance. The guy's a great signing. I think he's going to continue to get better and better, because remember, again, he's relatively inexperienced in terms of top flight football, because he was signing from Hull when he was at Hereford before that. He's young, you know. I mean, he's only getting better. 2 years' time, we're going to have a very, very, very good player on our hands there.
Yeah.
I mean, he is already, but he'll be even better.
Yeah. It's no surprise that he's been linked with Liverpool. I mean, his energy, his work rate, speed of transition into the final third, tenacity, his threat in front of goal. It just makes him such a strong contender for an England call-up. I mean, you know, if you're picking it on form, he's a genuine contender for the starting 11, but he's got to be knocking on the door for that squad. And this is what annoys me. If he played for a top four side, he'd be there already. This is what really irritates me with England, historically and currently. Okay, Declan Rice is an exception. But other than that, you know, it needles me, because when you're talking about keeping your best players at West Ham, one of those boxes those players want to be able to tick, other than wages and trophies, is how realistic is it that I'm going to play for my country if I stay at West Ham? Well, if they are, you know, performing week in, week out, and they're not being considered, and they know they would be if they played for a top four side, it just adds pressure on West Ham to keep our top players. And that's what gives me the fucking hump with this process. Like you, I don't want any of our players called up, because I think it's a hindrance to West Ham. But, you know, for them, I want it. And for West Ham, because like I say, if you're going to play for your national side when you're at West Ham, that can only be good for us in terms of making a statement of signing players and keeping them. Quick question for you. On the fans phoning last week, someone asked if there's potential of playing Deck in a number 10 role. And the same question is being asked of Jarrod when it comes to playing up front. What do you think?
Well, for both of them?
Not for Deck, because I think we covered that. But for Jarrod.
For Jarrod, I mean, he's played as a striker, isn't he? In Antonio's absence, he could play in that role as well as an attacking midfielder. For me at the moment, you can look at that next season possibly, and you can look at it in times of need. You know, if Antonio was injured, then yeah, you could stick him up there. But for me, when a player's performing as well as they are, and this is relevant to both Declan and Bowen, I just think you've got to keep them where they are, because Declan is world-class in his position. So that means out of the 11 players you pick, one of them is world-class. And then you can, I wouldn't say Bowen's quite to that standard yet, but he's getting not far off there. So, and wingers are just as important as a forward, because particularly the sort of characteristics of Bowen, where they do work back defensively as well. So they offer you someone that's trying to get, you know, amongst the sort of the midfielders of the opposition when they're defending, and then is breaking, like you said just then, at speed on the counter. I think he's so vital in the position that he is that personally I wouldn't. But of course, if there's an injury or going forward in the future when Antonio maybe is ready to sort of call it a day or whatever, and Bowen's still only 26, or wherever he may be at that time, you could convert him possibly to a forward. And look, if you think you can get a better option as a right winger to come in and have Bowen up front than you can getting a forward in, then yeah, it's something that you could be considered. But for me, always stick as it is for now. The way they're performing, I wouldn't change anything.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on, mate. I agree with you. And, you know, in the case of Declan, because he is so good and he's got so much to his game, and because you're starting to see these commanding forward runs that he's making, I can understand why people are saying put him in a more attacking role. But you would just miss so much from his game if we moved him from where he currently is. And it's the same that applies to Jared, because you would just miss his energy and, like I say, tenacity and work rate and hunger. You'd miss that from midfield so much if we did that. So, no, I totally agree. Lanzini. Is he running the risk of being back to his best, do you think?
Yeah, the problem with him, though, and I mean, it's coming in my section, but to sort of go a bit early on this, Ben, is that he was seen to be limping after the game and stuff, and rumours that he could be injured again. That hasn't been confirmed. And again,
but, do you know what, X? I think we've put a fucking curse on
mate, this. I put it in my notes. I actually put it in my notes in our section that you and I might have to hold some responsibility for this, because we said literally the week before Bonner got injured that this is the sign of a team that's going to do well, because we've had next to no injuries. And literally, since we said that, they're dropping our flies.
Yeah.
So apologies to everyone that we did that. Couldn't have West Ham getting too good, could we? But let's just hope that he is fit. I don't have confirmation on that yet, because the tests are being done yesterday and will be sort of finalised results wise today. So I don't have that information at this point. Let's just assume he is not injured. Then I think there is an element to say that he is. He's not the same player as he was. Obviously, he's not quite as pacey. He's not quite as tricky and stuff. You know, he doesn't take people on as much as he used to, and so on. But in terms of contribution to the game, then the last, I mean, it's probably a little bit premature to say he's back to that sort of early form we saw when he was on loan and we converted to signing to permanent. But he's certainly played as well in these last kind of 7 or 8 games or whatever it is that he has in the last 2-3 seasons before that, I would say. So let's hope that if he can build on this, then we're going to start to get him back to what he was. Because again, he's not that old. He's what, 27, 28, is he? Something like that. So he's still got years to ahead of him. And if he can convert himself now to a more sort of, you know, creative attacking midfielder, then we've got a very good player in our hands. And it's funny, I had a bet on him to score. I had a bet on him to score against Chelsea on Friday night. Yeah, because I knew he was playing. Or should I probably should admit this? I'm not sure how legal this is. Okay, I might have had a bet on him on Friday. It would have been a good idea if I had done that, because he just always scores against Chelsea. Always, you know.
What did you get for that?
I think it was 10-1, I think, something like
was
that.
It?
So it was, I never remember, because I put about 4 or 5 bets on at the same time. I can check for him in this section. But because he always scores against the top teams. Always scores. And always scores against London teams, for that matter. You know, he's always a shoo-in, I think, to score against Tottenham or Chelsea if he's playing. So it turned out to be. I was surprised he took the penalty, actually. You know, you're going to think Antonio and Declan were on the pitch.
Yeah, why did he take it? Do you know?
Well, I just assume he's taken Paris before. You know, he took them in the cup, hasn't he? And he's taken them for us in other cup competitions. And Saville always scored.
What a penalty that was, by the way.
Yeah, it was a brilliant penalty. It was the right choice. But actually, on the pitch, you know, you had Declan, you had Antonio, you had Bowen. You know, and believe it or not, and people, I don't know, people are aware of this, but Dawson's a very good penalty taker as well. You know, he scored against Man City with that, and he scored penalties in his career at other clubs as well. So, you know, we had quite a few. So I was surprised that he took it. And a bit of me was a little bit scared because obviously he hadn't played for, you know, started a game for a while and so on. I thought maybe he might be a bit nervous about it. But no, it took so well. And particularly when he saw what Reece James did to him. Have you seen that footage?
Yeah, I don't know what he said to him. Do you know?
No, but he was just shouting, trying to put him off, wasn't he? So pathetic behaviour from a player that plays for the top club. But anyway, so I think Lanzini's best season this year so far in a number of seasons, I would say. Not quite to the levels we saw before. If he continues the way we are, he's not going to be far off it, is he?
No, totally, totally. Mazuaku, right, that euphoric moment, the ball at the back of the net. Did you think he meant it?
Well, it's interesting because obviously I was at the game live, so you have no idea when your initial reaction is, because, you know, to score from that angle, your initial reaction is, well, that's a cross. You know, like when you don't see a replay, because you never see players really attempt to score from the throw at the byline, do you really, from that angle? And then when you saw the replay on the TV, on the screens, I mean, straight after the goal, it almost looked like he had. But, I mean, it's been put, like they had meant it, but it's been put to doubt now, is it, by the man himself, who's tweeted that he was as surprised as anyone else to see it go in. So that's the answer.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know what, though, mate? And until we'd done that, I thought that he did mean it. And that's the funny thing, yeah, because obviously I wasn't at the game and I was watching it on telly and I did look at the replay over and over.
Yeah.
And the thing is with Arthur, you know, he does have it in his locker to do clever stuff. He's a very skillful player and at times he can be quite creative. And when you look at the way the keeper came out, that split second and he leaves that space available, I don't know. It looked intentional to me. And I would have argued that it was until he came out and said that he didn't mean it. But do you know what? It's like we said, who gives a fuck? He could have got it off his fucking arse. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. I think it's a great thing. I think a lucky goal like that to beat your London rivals, I think it's a really good thing because obviously it would have been slightly better if it was a 35-yard screamer that he'd meant or whatever, because it would have been, you know, that sort of self-pride. But in terms of a team, you know, when a team gets lucky moments like that, you start to think, well, maybe this is our year. You know, it gets into your head. You win a game like that with a goal like that, you know, you do start to think, well, maybe this is going to happen. I mean, Mendy has been brilliant for Chelsea since they signed him. Yeah, he was well dodgy
on
Saturday. You know, so that moment came really, really well for us. You know, they had Lukaku and Werner on the bench. Arguably, we've seen when Lukaku came, obviously barely moved. Arguably, neither of them were fit enough to be in that squad. So we played Chelsea at a good time in that respect. And don't take anything away from West Ham's performance. I thought we played really well, obviously, but with a bit of luck thrown in, that is good. And that is good for the fans and the players to think, wow, we maybe might have something on our side here. Because, you know, you look at the goal against Brighton, the one that was chalked off for VAR, I still can't entirely get my head around the decision. Sometimes I think, yes, it was the right decision. Sometimes I don't. But you could have called that maybe unlucky. But now that luck's been evened out, and I think good. Let's move on. And the fixtures coming up, mate, you know, they're all winnable. You know, the next six Premier League fixtures, I think we've got Burnley away. I mean, we've got Burnley away, you've got Norwich, isn't there? You've got Arsenal away, you've got Southampton, you've got Watford, and you've got Crystal Palace. You know, they're all winnable games. Every one of those is winnable. Arguably, the hardest one's Arsenal, but Arsenal aren't the team they once were. If we go into that game confident, we're as good a team as Arsenal are. So really, you could be picking up a big load of points from that. Coming into January, we could be in a very healthy position.
I'm going back to Arthur's goal for a minute. Let's not underplay the part that the ball boy Oh, yeah, in that build-up. I mean, his speed and reaction made that goal, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, I was going to do, the question was asked by one of the patrons about him and asked, is he an academy player? And he is an academy player. He's an under-15s goalkeeper. All the ball boys that are around the pitch are academy players, every one of them. So he's a keeper, and he's actually got a bit of fame from it now. I started to have a look at his Instagram, and he's obviously posting things where people have commented and said, like, you know, said how well he did and that. I'm just going to find his name now.
I was going to say, it'd be good to get his name out there, I think.
Yeah, oh, that's annoying. Where, I thought on Instagram, you can, you know, hold on, this might be the way to do it. No, I don't know where it's gone now. That's a shame. I'll quickly scroll through. I'll be able to find it. But yeah, he's a young goalkeeper. I think he's in our under-15s. I think from memory, he might have actually possibly played for England, like Stall Boys. But he's certainly a decent keeper. Yeah, his reactions are brilliant and played a massive role in it. And actually, you know, there's some managers that use the ball boys as a tactic. You know, yeah, they give instructions to the ball boys before they go out to certain games. You know, like they say, if West Ham are winning, you know, towards the end and it's you know, a close game or whatever, take your time, you know, to just slow it down. Take your time getting the ball before you give it to the opposition and so on. Other times, you know, get the ball quickly to them so we can attack quickly. And it seemed like he did the other there. It was a real big contribution.
It was. Do you know what as well? Antonio's movement for that goal, I think that gets underplayed a little bit as well. The way he takes James away to create that space for Mares to get his shot away, superb. And so late on in the game, you know, Antonio, he never gives up. He's always striving, and I love him for that. But yeah, what a euphoric moment that was. Fantastic. Great result. And they know what they can do with that fucking blue flag, don't they?
What you want Moyes to do to you?
I'll give it back, I swear. Zagreb on Thursday. I know we've had the debate as to how many youngsters we would play, but will one of those youngsters be Sonny Perkins, do you think? Because he seems to be the man of the hour, doesn't he, in the academy?
Yeah, I think so. I will talk about this in my section more, because there's certain players that can and can't play in the game. And I'm going to talk about this, but yeah, obviously Perkins is one of the ones that can, because he played in the last round. So I would definitely play him. He's one of the academy players that I would say definitely needs to start, because at the end of the day, you don't want to risk Antonio. I wouldn't risk Bowen either. We've got no other player that can play up front. This is a perfect chance for us to see, you know, exactly how good he is. Play him in that game, give him some experience. You know, if he gets a goal, that's going to be a massive boost for him. So, yeah, he's definitely someone that I would start in that game. When you're talking about academy players, he's definitely one I would.
And then it's Burnley. How do you feel about that game? I think that's a tough one, you know.
It is. It's hard to predict Burnley. You know, they seem to be one of those teams that are a bit up and down at the moment. For me, whoever's fit, I think we're going to struggle to have Zouma fit for that game, you know, to say the least. So in that game, I would go back to having four at the back, because we are a better team than Burnley. I think we got to attack them. So I would be going four at the back for that game. But it's a tough one. You can never predict Burnley, really. Like, you know, it's going to be cold up there. It's going to be up north. You know, Burnley's a unique place. It's a tough one. That one, tougher than people probably think it will be.
Okay, let's see what X has to say this week. To listen to the rest of this podcast, you need to be a patron of the West Ham Way. Becoming a patron couldn't be easier. Just visit patreon.com/the West Ham Way and confirm your subscription to get full access to the West Ham Way podcast, our second weekly show called the West Ham Way podcast Extra Time, classic clips of audio and video interviews, exclusive news from X, match day team news before anyone else, an exclusive forum, live Q&As with myself and X, monthly prize draws, discounts on events and merchandise, and behind the scenes content, all of which for just £5 a month.
The is it morning yet deal. How about now? Or now? Because morning time is McDonald's breakfast time. And that's the best time of all the times.
Wake up with a little splash of sweetness. Get any size iced coffee from caramel to hazelnut to French vanilla for just 99 cents until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. The share it with a friend deal. Even if that friend is yourself. Your McDonald's, your rules.
Live your best morning with BOGO breakfast sandwiches only on the McDonald's app. Now buy one bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles or sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles and get a second one free. Valid for item of equal or lesser value. Limited time only at participating McDonald's. Valid one per day. Excludes $1-$3 menu. Visit McDonald's app for details. Download and registration required.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.